This is Kim Glass. I'm the Executive Director of the Blue-Green Alliance. Ambassador Froman has testified before the Senate Finance Committee this morning and will be testifying to the House Ways and Means Committee about the trade policy agenda for the next year. This follows the President's State of the Union address, which called on Congress to pass fast-track authority. The administration is making an all-out push to get Congress to fast-track the consideration of a fast-track bill and conclude the TPP negotiations in the coming weeks. In fact, the TPP negotiations are happening in New York City as we speak. Senator Orrin Hatch in recent days has called on the Senate to consider fast-track authority by the end of February. The Blue-Green Alliance opposes fast-track because it removes critically important checks and balances in the process. Many members of Congress, labor unions, environmental organizations, and other stakeholders have been sounding the alarm bells in recent months and for many years that trade deals drafted in secrecy and where elected members of Congress have no real role is a recipe for disaster. Fast Track allows Congress to excuse themselves from their constitutional right to monitor international trade. Average citizens have no access to what's going on. This was a point raised by senators on the Senate Finance Committee today. We need to put Fast Track on the slow track to ensure the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement is done right. The Blue-Green Alliance supports fair, transparent trade that doesn't engage the U.S. in a race to the bottom. Fast Track is the opposite of that. That's why it's wrong for our workers, economy, and environment. The Blue-Green Alliance is proud to be a part of a broader coalition fighting for trade fairness, fighting for transparency, and ensuring that the Trans-Pacific Partnership protects labor and environmental standards, a critical part of trade negotiations. We are turning up the heat on making sure we hold members of Congress and trade negotiators accountable. The American people deserve no less. And with that, I will pass it off to Leo Gerard, the International President of the United Steelworkers. Leo?
Thank you, Kim. Let me just maybe repeat a bit of ancient history. Since the passage of Trade Promotion Authority in the various trade agreements, the Economic Policy Institute has identified close to 700,000 jobs that were lost from NAFTA, 60,000 jobs that were lost since the passage of the Korea Free Trade Deal, and an unlimited amount of jobs that are almost incalculable from the preferential trade treatment that we gave China. And I want to regurgitate a couple of really troubling examples that directly affect our union. And for us, trade is not a matter of numbers. It's a matter of lives and jobs and lost opportunity. We filed a case on a paper case. We succeeded in proving that the other side was cheating, but there was no remedy because we hadn't been injured enough. So we waited a couple of years and we filed virtually the same case, and this time there was a remedy. Well, we just had to file another trade case just last week on uncoated paper. We did the same thing on tires. And some of you will remember we did a 421 case, which we were thankful the president took. And we had a substantial duty and substantial penalty on Chinese dumped and imported tires. That duty ran out, and within 6 months of that duty running out, the Chinese put over 50 million tires into the American market. We did a trade case that we succeeded on drill pipe with Korea. Korea was given a remedy. The Korean government, working with the Korean company, basically ignored the remedy, figured out a way that they could absorb it, because they don't sell 1 pound of pipe in their market. And as a result of that, the Korean, South Koreans have in fact increased the export of pipe into our market rather than live with the penalty. They're just eating the penalty. All of these were brought to us thanks through Fast Track. All of these were brought to us through deals that without Fast Track probably wouldn't have passed. And so for us, this is really about life and death of jobs, workers having the ability to earn a decent income. And I can't say how many times we've gone to the bargaining table with smaller employers where that employer has said to us, we have to meet the Chinese price, we have to meet the Korean price. We're living in a global market, and we're working with with companies that don't play by the rules in any of the countries I've mentioned. So there's good reason for us to be against Fast Track. And then again, I'll be extremely candid. We've been working with, trying to work with the administration on the TPP. And at this point, we're pretty frustrated where we haven't received much transparency, much knowledge. And I can just say that if the TPP is, looks and smells like the Korea trade deal or the NAFTA trade deal or the preferential trade treatment we gave China, history will repeat itself and we'll continue to lose jobs. So we're going to aggressively oppose Fast Track as it exists now, and we're going to obviously push for no Fast Track, but if we're going to have Fast Track, it has to be one that protects jobs. And we're not going to get that out of a system where the Congress gives up its right to review a trade deal and only gets a straight up and down vote. So for us, as I pointed out, this is real stuff. It isn't just academic numbers. Yet I could still go through and talk about the accumulated trade debts that we've had since NAFTA, since PNTR, since South Korea trade deal. And in fact, with South Korea's trade deal, we had a $3 billion deficit in the last reported month, which was October. So if you extrapolate that for a year, when we used to have balanced trade with South Korea, we're now running a multi-billion dollar, almost $30 to $40 billion trade deficit, and that's already cost us 60,000 American jobs. So I'll turn it back to you, Kim. And as I said, for us in our union, a manufacturing union, these are real numbers. These are real lives that are affected by the job loss.
Thank you, Leo. And with that, I'll turn it over to Congressman Pocan from Wisconsin.
Oh, thank you, Kim. Appreciate it. Well, clearly Congress has a constitutional duty when it comes to these contracts, and Fast Track takes away, I believe, that constitutional duty to really have a chance to debate and to amend a contract that can have so much ramifications, not just for labor and for the environment, but for currency policy, for food safety, for Buy American laws, go down the list of things that can be affected. We can't make the same mistakes of the past when it comes to trade deals, and the president himself recognized some of the bad problems we've had from past trade deals. As President Girard mentioned about job loss, I've seen firsthand in Wisconsin closed factories, depleted industries, and lost jobs. We can't allow multinational corporations to drain our precious resources, making billions of profit, but no ability to have local control over these resources. What we find is all too often in the trade deals, and we believe it's also true of TPP from what we've seen, is a lack of a real enforcement and clearly a lack of transparency. One of the interesting things, I think, when it comes to transparency, we had sat with the U.S. Trade Rep's office specifically about some of the environmental provisions. I had asked very specific questions and was told item after item, four items in particular, that they were absolutely non-negotiable from a U.S. perspective. And then when the very next member of Congress asked a question and said, well, does that mean you won't bring us a trade deal if they don't include those? The answer was, well, I didn't say that. That is hardly transparency. That, where I come from, is called a shell game. What we need is really to know what's in the TPP, what the 600 people, the corporate CEOs and others who've been drafting this have put in there, and what that means for jobs and what that means for environment and what that means for all the other chapters that are included within a trade deal. I know that the U.S. Trade Representative Office is revamping their website to somehow provide transparency. I'll tell you, transparency doesn't mean you need a new website. Transparency means if this deal is as good as they're saying it is, show it. Show us how good it is. The problem is when I and other members have looked at some of these chapters and where they're at in the negotiations, this is nothing more than NAFTA on steroids. This is nothing more than what we've seen in the past, and in some cases, actually slippage, in my opinion, from past trade deals. So if we're going to protect the environment, if we're going to protect American workers, if we're going to protect our food safety and our medications that come into this country, if we're going to protect our sovereignty to have local laws like Buy American and Buy Local, we need to know what's in this trade deal and giving up our responsibility as members of Congress to actually debate and to amend this is a bad deal. So we are strongly against Fast Track. We want to have a transparent and thoroughly reviewed process, and we need to have more people involved in this than are involved right now. And with that, Kim, I'll send it back to you.
Thank you, Congressman. And Larry Cohen, the President of the Communications Workers of America. Larry?
Thanks, Kim. Leo, Congressman Pocan, and those yet to come. I think what's most critical here is this coalition. So we can all point to, and we've heard good arguments about Fast Track and what's wrong with it. I think what's significant today is that the largest coalition that brings together millions of American workers, along with millions of members of the biggest environmental groups in the country, like the Sierra Club and the NRDC, to name but a few, are working together to define 21st century trade instead of, as Leo said, accepting the failed 20th century trade regimes of NAFTA and CAFTA all the way up through Korea. The coalition, as Congressman Pocan just said, it not only includes the millions and millions of members in these organizations, and again, applaud the leadership of Blue-Green Alliance. I'm proud to have been a member of Blue-Green since Leo recruited us. But beyond that, we have enormous organizations that have never worked on trade before together. Huge number of congregations and faith-based groups. Immigrant rights groups that are still reeling from their own problems. All the large immigrant groups have joined with us to say the failed trade story is also our story. I was recently in Honduras and documented, again, we issued a report, an AFL-CIO report a couple of weeks ago, documenting the failed promises of CAFTA from that end, let alone our own end, and interviewed deportees in the San Pedro Sula airport, and their story was the failed story of CAFTA. Their families pushed off their land after CAFTA when large landowners took over, substituted African palm, which they could export for beans, corns, and rice, pushed them into the cities where the job promises weren't fulfilled. And when we went to a Fruit of the Loom plant that was one of the few plants paying minimum wage, the managers of that plant told me, we have no opportunity, no possibility to compete with Vietnam with 90 million people and a minimum wage, half the Honduran minimum wage, less about 50 cents an hour in Vietnam with 90 million people and an average wage of 75 cents. And as we have just heard, on Fast Track itself, that basically means an up or down vote in Congress with no amendments. What is the U.S. trade representative afraid of? What is the president afraid of? Why are we throwing in with Boehner trade? Right now, it's well documented, a majority of the House Democratic Caucus, an overwhelming majority, about 150 members, oppose the president on Fast Track. Is he going to roll his own party on Fast Track and unite with Boehner and pass Boehner trade? That's what this is about right now. There's not one good argument for doing it. And when the USTR says to the Finance Committee, we have a better chapter on labor than before, that's true. But the enforcement is exactly the same. 3 years ago, we filed with Hondurans on CAFTA. We're still waiting for the Labor Department to issue a report on our complaints of murder, of trashing of workers' rights. 3 years. Guatemala was 6 years till anyone in this government said boo. We've had it with government-to-government enforcement while multinational corporations get to sue for billions of dollars in secret arbitration cases, and we're told, don't worry, the government will enforce the labor provisions or the environmental provisions. It's time for citizen rights to count the same as corporate rights. Great to be on here, Kim.
Thanks, Larry. Debbie Seitz, the Federal Campaign Director of the Sierra Club.
Thank you, Kim. On behalf of the Sierra Club's 2.4 million members and supporters that fight daily to protect the planet for future generations, we stand today with the Blue-Green Alliance to oppose fast-tracking flawed trade deals like the TPP. So let's count the ways that today's trade deals disrupt our lives, shipping our jobs overseas, dumping our wages along the way, bringing unsafe food to our dinner tables, and selling out our clean air and our clean water for corporate profits. Just one example, the TTP is going to include a little-known rule called investor-state dispute settlement that would allow foreign companies to sue our government in private trade tribunals to gut environmental safeguards and other laws and policies that corporations allege reduce their profits. Furthermore, fast-track legislation, if passed, would dangerously expedite passage of this and other secretly negotiated trade deals. It would allow the president to send a signed trade agreement to the Congress for limited floor debate, no amendments, and a simple up or down vote. With Fast Track, members of Congress lose their ability to ensure that trade pacts protect the American public, protect workers, protect our economy and the environment. Champions of climate progress, clean air protections, wilderness preservations, none of those will have a chance to make sure that trade deals don't undo that progress. So the bottom line is that with Fast Track, we'd be trading away our clean air, our clean water, our safe communities. Fast Track also, I think, dangerously strips the United States government of one of its defining democratic characteristics, the check and balance structure that's enshrined in our Constitution. So for these and other reasons, just this past week, more than 50 environmental groups have come out against Fast Track in a letter sent to Congress. It's also why then more than 100,000 Sierra Club members and supporters have joined hundreds of thousands of other concerned citizens calling on their members of Congress to oppose Fast Track. There's a lot at stake. It's the quality of the air our families breathe, the way they drink the water they drink, the quality of our trade agreements. And rushing massive trade agreements through Congress without oversight or accountability, it would be a disaster. So in the months ahead, our elected officials, our leaders, must stand up for the health and safety of Americans. They must ignore the rhetoric, and they must finally oppose Fast Track. Thank you. I'll kick it back to you, Kim.
Thanks, Debbie. And with our last speaker, but not least, Loretta Johnson, the Secretary-Treasurer, American Federation of Teachers. Loretta?
Thank you, and good afternoon. This afternoon, I'm joining my colleagues from labor and the environmental movement on behalf of a million of Americans and calling for transparency and greater congressional input on the international trade deal. While some want you to believe that trade promotion authority will create U.S. jobs, the truth is this bill would create an open season on exportation of American jobs. Now, don't get me wrong. We believe in international trade that is fair, transparent, and just. International trade can be used as a tool to improve shared global prosperity, ensure workers' rights, protect consumers, and safeguard the environment. This is why our communities need a transparent and accessible process. But Fast Track misses the mark. Our elected leaders go to Washington to be our voice. Under Fast Track, Congress will have no say in selecting our trade partners, negotiating trade terms, or debating and amending trade agreements. The 21st century agreement will require openness and transparency. Fast Track would roll back the clock and double down on a process that is already far too secretive. We should be working on slowing down Fast Track so trade agreements can be written in the light under the scrutiny of the public. And now is the time to have a more open and transparent government. Now is the time to restore and check balances. Now is the time to urge member Congress to ask the tough questions and stop the passes of Fast Track. I'll turn it back to you, Kim.
All right. Thank you, Loretta. I'm going to ask Ryan, the operator, to remind us how folks can ask questions. Ryan?
Certainly, the floor is now open for questions. If you do have a question, please press the number 7 or the letter Q on your telephone keypad. Questions will be taken in the order they were received. If at any point your question has been answered, you may press 7 or Q again to disable your request. If you are using a speakerphone, we ask while posing your question, you pick up your handset to provide favorable sound quality. Please hold while we wait for the first question. first question comes from John Brinkley. John, please state your question.
Hi, thank you. This is for any of the speakers who would care to respond. Does any of you think that given that no multilateral and only one bilateral trade agreement has ever been passed without fast track, does any of you think there's a way for Congress to amend the TPP and still get it ratified by not only obviously by the United States, but ratified by the 11 other parties?
It's Larry Cohen. I would just give one quick answer to you, which is, as far as I know, none of the other 11 parties have the equivalent of fast track, yet that doesn't seem to be a concern. And I think, you know, part of the problem is the way in the U.S. we conflate trade with foreign policy objectives and then call it economic. And so that's why we have massive opposition to this, because the interests of the headquarters of the multinationals are not the same as Leo's members or my members who work for these companies. They want the cheapest place, as Jack Welch said 15 years ago, to produce, and then they move it again when there's another place that's cheaper. We want jobs. We want balanced trade. And that's the problem here. The other countries don't do trade deals unless they think they're going to get a trade advantage. We do trade deals knowing that we're going to have increased trade deficits, as Leo pointed out. Why can't Fast Track say that a condition of any trade agreement is certification that there won't be increasing deficits, that there won't be a net job loss, not just job gains for certain exporters or headquarters? This is no other country, including these 12, approach this deal the way we do. That's the fundamental problem here. That's why they need Fast Track in this country and in every other country where they have a democracy. Half of these are not democracies. They have to go through their parliament. They don't have a fast track through the Canadian parliament. They got to take it through like any other legislation.
And to Leo Gerard, to pick up on what Larry said, and most of the other countries don't have anything nearing fast track. In fact, it gets debated in their parliament, with the exception of the totalitarian regimes that just will decree it. But having said that, let me just tell you that there's a number of European countries who, in fact, have a trade surplus or a balanced trade with countries like Mexico, South Korea, China. We're one of the few advanced democracies, advanced industrial societies, United States, Canada, Great Britain, who are on this agenda of trading off their industrial base for State Department preferences. Somebody had to tell me, why did we need a trade deal with Colombia for Venezuela? Why did we need a trade deal with South Korea when we had a balanced trade arrangement? Why do we want a trade deal with Vietnam? Because we think Chinese wages are growing too high. And if you do any additional research, you'll find that the biggest engines behind these trade deals are not only multinational corporations, but the multinational financial community. Most of these deals aren't about trade. They're about investment. They're about the ability to move capital and jobs into any country at the capitalist and the financial industry's whim.
Okay, with that, we'll take another question.
Once again, if you do have a question, please press 7 or Q on your telephone keypad. Again, that's 7 or Q on your telephone keypad. The next question comes from David Thomas. David, please state your question.
Hi, yes. Thank you for taking my question, and thank you for holding this call. This question is primarily for Mr. Gerard, although if others would like to weigh in, that would be fine. Mr. Gerard, I believe either yesterday or perhaps earlier today, USW released a statement saying that Congressman Sander Levin's proposals for modifying the Trans-Pacific Partnership are a good step, but ultimately don't go far enough. I was hoping to get your thoughts on, do you think Do you see Congressman Levin in attracting Democratic votes if the Obama administration were to adopt his proposal? Do you think he's trying to play the role of basically deal maker in that, you know, if the administration accedes to his demands, he'll be able to deliver, you know, X amount of votes? I was just hoping to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I'm not going to judge Sandy's intentions. What we did say is what we said in writing is that obviously saying that you had to deal with currency is an important statement. But if you have a currency provision that isn't enforceable, it's not worth its weight. There's a number of other issues that Sandy's raised that are steps in the right direction. But again, if you can't enforce what would be there, it certainly wouldn't go far enough. So I'm not judging Sandy's positioning. What I'm saying is some of the things that he put forward are the kinds of things we in an open discussion, should be discussing. We should be discussing them transparently. And once we get to where we are, then we can make a decision of whether or not it's worthy of support, if it's going to create. And my benchmark is, can we guarantee that it will create net job gains for the country? And if that's where Sandy's proposals took us, with the ability to enforce, that would be positive progress. But without ability to enforce and to enforce them rapidly, it has no bearing. It has no basis. Let me just say that we worked with the administration to bring forward a case on export subsidies by China. It's been in consultation now for over 2 years. Larry mentioned Honduras. Well, we filed, we being the labor movement, we brought a case on labor rights in Guatemala. 6 years later, there's a decision on labor rights in Guatemala. Now, there's no way to enforce that decision in Guatemala. And if the decision had come 6 weeks or 6 months after the complaint, well, you'd say, well, they're moving forward. And then if we took steps to enforce it, we'd say, well, that's coming around. But it took 6 years and there's no enforcement. So those are the kinds of things where Sandy talked about if they were moving in that direction. And we say, yeah, if they're moving in that direction and we're meaningful and enforceable, it would certainly make it look like a different deal than NAFTA.
Okay. I have a follow-up question. I guess this is for kind of everyone on the call. Inside U.S. Trade wrote a story today basically talking about how the new Democrat coalition in the House is hoping to get 40 House Democrats to vote in favor of a TPA bill, although we've heard from a couple other people that perhaps maybe that's too high of a number. I was just hoping to kind of get your thoughts on it, in particular, Congressman Pocan's thoughts on whether this is, whether you think this is feasible or too high, too low. What are your thoughts?
Sure. Well, one, we know the White House is very aggressively reaching out to members and talking to them about this, and we know that there are some, but it's a relatively small number who are actively promoting fast track within the House Democrats. I think that number personally is an aggressive number, and I also think that it's important to note that the Republicans on a separate but parallel track are also organizing around this issue and have concerns on it. So I don't know if 40 is a magic number. I know that they're going to reach out to members of Congress. I think about 80 people, from what I understand, are being targeted, and various cabinet secretaries are calling people they're close to. This is a full push from the White House. But we clearly, when we talk to members and when you watch the president deliver the State of the Union, you could see where the vast, vast majority of Democrats are on this issue. We want to know what's in this. And even if you are someone who is a new Dem or a conservative Democrat who might be more open to some of these trade deals, you still want to know what's in it. And that's our constitutional job, is to know what's in it. And if they're not giving us that, it's really hard to convince anyone, regardless of your ideology, to go ahead and write a blank check.
Yeah, this is Larry Cohen. I would just chime in quickly to say how sad it is that the White House would call it a victory to get 20% of the Democrats in the House to vote with them on the major, I would call it the major issue that he has any chance of passing. How sad that is, 20% of his own party, after that party stood with him on every major issue, standing up to Boehner on every issue, those House members, like Mark Pocan. How sad that is. Pathetic, I would call it. And instead passing Boehner trade, and we will stick to that name. That's what this is. This is the Chamber of Commerce, the Business Roundtable, the President, and Boehner.
Okay, we're going to take one more question. I know we have some time commitments from the speakers on the call today. So one more question. Thank you.
Thank you. We have time for just one more question. The next question comes from Meredith Gilson. Meredith, please state your question.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. One was, there was talk like last year about this whole idea of smart track. I think it was from Senator Wyden that would, you know, increase oversight. Is there any chance of that? Have you heard anything? And my other question is just, I'm surprised to see a representative from the Teachers Federation. I was wondering what your mandate is from your members and how you're involved in this fight. Thanks.
Well, the AFT believes that current trade agreements, as they are being negotiated, will make it difficult to regulate in the public interest and have potential to lock in future privatization and undermine our democracy. And we feel the impact of trade agreements go so far beyond factories and industry, and they have effect on the core of our democracy. And that is why us, a public sector union like us, we are advocating for transparency and open trade negotiations. And we've seen how bad deals have hurt the U.S. economy and the work in the environment, and allowing the administrators to negotiate a deal in a veil of secrecy sets a bad precedent and begs the question, what is there to hide? And I remember NAFTA, and I remember the impact it had on the public sector unions with layoffs, furloughs, all lost jobs in the public sector.
My other question about the smart track, Mr. Cohen or Mr. Gerard, do you have a sense of that?
So last year, again, I testified at Senate Finance against Baucus Camp, and the problem we have is that the different trade promotion authority bills are fast track. You can give them different names, like TPA. They all end up pointing in the same direction. As Leo said, there's no requirements about enforcement of anything. Meaningful enforcement of anything except actions multinationals can bring under investor state dispute settlement. And so the words, for most of the rest of it, are not enforceable unless our government chooses to enforce it. And on the labor rights environmental side, 6-year wait for Guatemala, you know, doesn't cut it. People were murdered and killed during that time, and nothing's been done, even after the 6 years. Honduras is 3 years, and we haven't even issued a report. So that's the problem. Senator Wyden's smart track is not going to change that. It's not going to change enforcement of currency manipulation. The Japanese yen in less than a year has gone from about 80 yen to the dollar to 122 with a trade surplus. Again, from the point of view of Japan, that makes sense. But from the point of view of the United States and workers here, that means more lost jobs. It's a discount on the labor costs there compared to here. We've got to look at outcomes, not foreign policy outcomes, but outcomes for American workers and our communities, as Loretta described. Our members are 90% service sector, mostly private, but some public sector. The service sector in Detroit was devastated. The service sector in Philadelphia, where I grew up, or Baltimore, where Loretta grew up, has been devastated by these deals. So we don't get to hide in a service sector job. We get smashed in the second round.
Before we adjourn, let me just try to make a point, and it may be I'm overly technical, but our union lives and dies by our fighting trade deals and fighting unfair trade day in and day out. And I'll take you through the steel industry. We file cases and we prove, A, that the party we're filing the case against has not played by the so-called rules, has cheated, and using the rules there'll be a determination. And the determination will put a penalty on and put a time limit on that penalty. The other side, in the case in particular of China that has almost 400 million tons of overcapacity in steel, they'll just keep coming And they'll eat the loss because most of them are state-owned enterprises and don't work by a traditional business model. Well, they'll keep eating into our market, and we'll win the case, and they'll come back. And as a result of the year, the 2 years it took us to make the case and go through, we've lost market share, we've lost capacity, we've lost ability to defend our members, we've lost all that stuff. And then they go do it again. And that case will take another 2 years. And while they're doing that, they keep flooding the market, as I just said, with tires, as the Koreans did with steel. And so not only do we need a different trade deal, if we're going to talk about trade, we need to have the benchmark being, will it create net job gains? And will it create a level playing field? And there's nothing on the drawing board that shows that that's going to be the case. And as I said, I take you back to steel. 44 million tons of raw steel brought into the U.S. last year. 33 million tons of what's called finished steel. That could be steel that's made into a steel component. The Chinese have said they're going to put $100 billion worth of auto parts into the U.S. market by 2016. You can't do that by traditional business models. They're going to do that with state-owned enterprises that don't play by the rules. We'll file a trade case. We'll eventually win it. But by the time we have won it, we'll have lost jobs. They'll get a duty. We'll live with that duty for a couple of years. Then they'll do it again. And so not only are these trade deals not enforceable in the way that creates jobs and protects jobs, our trade laws are antiquated. Our trade laws don't even work. And so, again, you compare us to Germany. Germany has a trade surplus with China. If Germany could do it, I'm sure we could do it if we were working on a different standard.
Thank you. That does conclude today's teleconference. We thank you for your participation. You may disconnect your line at this time.